Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
How do you respond to tragedy? The easiest thing to do now in a social media age is just fire everybody involved in a tragedy. Player dies in a workout. Easiest thing Maryland could have done was just come out and say, DJ Durkin is fired. Nobody is allowed to continue that was associated with this death at all. And then the internet's going to be like, okay, we got our pound of flesh. Somebody prominent was to blame for something bad that happened. But what if something bad just happened and there isn't really a direct line of blame to somebody who's in a prominent space? What do you do then? And I think that's the question that Maryland was confronted with. And it's easy to get on your moral outrage high horse and be like, everybody's got to be fired every time something happens. But I don't think the Maryland Board of Trustees is trying to make a bad decision. I don't think they were like, hey, we've got to protect DJ Durkin come hell or high water. Why do I believe that? Because I don't think DJ Durkin's a good enough coach right now, frankly. I think they got a pretty good backup coach, Matt Canada. I think Maryland football is going to be fine. But I think that what the Board of Trustees at Maryland was doing was they were looking at all the evidence and they were saying, we don't believe that DJ Durkin is to blame, which is why we are reinstating him as head coach right now. Because the easiest thing, and the Maryland Board of Trustees had to know this, the easiest thing they could have done to make the story go away is they could have fired him. Instead, they reinstate him, and then everybody gets upset that he's been reinstated, and he gets fired around 24 hours later. But I still don't know that we have an easy answer here as to where the line of culpability is drawn and to what should happen. And so I think it's a good discussion. I think it's good for everybody out there to get comfortable with the fact that nuance is difficult. I feel like in our country today, we have so created this idea that everything is either good or evil, and social media is a big part of it, that we have no room for nuance. What happens on hard cases? What happens on difficult calls to make? What if there is evidence that this guy is not the worst human being on the planet? There had to be that evidence for the Maryland Board of Trustees to keep him. And they had to make a hard call in what they thought was a difficult situation that didn't have an easy answer. And the internet's answer is always easy. It's always fire somebody. Gotta fire somebody. Because it does away with the story and it completes the trajectory of the narrative. But it's childlike oftentimes. I've made this analogy a few times. My kids, when they were young, my four-year-old certainly now, believes that every animal is either good or bad. It's a Disney-fied view of life. You watch a movie with a young kid, and they'll be like, you ask them, are snakes bad or good? Snakes are bad. Are dogs good or bad? Dogs are good. And they don't have any room for nuance. The idea that there might be a nice snake or a bad dog is not acceptable to them because in their world, they're making everything bipolar. You're either good or you're either bad. That's what the internet does. The internet is not a high level of discourse, and I see it everywhere, by the way. Hillary Clinton, good or evil. Donald Trump, good or evil. We are creating our world in a series of artificial binaries that doesn't allow any nuanced analysis at all. And the truth of the matter is, people are so afraid of going against those binaries that I bet you won't hear a single other national sports talk or radio show where a guy will be like, you know what, I don't know what the correct answer was. Let's have a discussion about what the blame for DJ Durkin should be.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Welcome back. We're in the Geico Outkick Studios, where it's easy to save 15% or more on car insurance with Geico. Go to geico.com or call 800-947-AUTO. The only hard part, figuring out which way is easier. I'm going to get a bunch more of your calls in here. John in Kansas City. What's up, John?
Hey, man. How you doing?
Excellent.
Hey, listen, I'm completely with you. I don't think that this guy deserves to be fired at all. I think it's real interesting how cavalier people are with other people's jobs. But this comes into, you got to control the things you can control in life, and you got to not worry about stuff that you can't. And like you said, it sounds like Maryland didn't think he was at fault, and people don't care. They're just, well, somebody's dead, so somebody's got to be fired. I don't agree with that either.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Look, I think that he would not have been fired in a pre-social media era. And I think social media uniquely wants there to always be a villain when something bad happens. And it needs to be a villain that they can focus on. The strength and conditioning coach wasn't famous enough. DJ Durkin was famous enough. Brian in Evansville, what's up?
Hey, Clay, just a couple points on this. I agree with you that I don't think he should have been fired over this, you know, unless it's proven he was 100% responsible for it, which I don't think the university found that he was. Second, I think more importantly, we need to look at what the NCAA can do moving forward on this to protect these kids, you know, from events like this occurring. And this happened, a decade ago in the NFL with Corey Stringer in Minnesota. And, you know, the NFL responded to that. And I don't think they've had another incident like that. Now, it's not saying it won't ever happen again, you know, but I think they've put protocols in place for that.
Yep.
Especially in this day and age when they're doing all they can with the targeting, you know, and the concussions and everything like that. I think this is just another incident where you need to put an extra trainer or two on that practice field and watch these kids. And if the kid says, hey, I need a timeout, I'm getting way too hot, heat stroke, or, you know, something's going on, step in and give the kid a break for a minute, you know.
I mean,
it's not worth anybody's life.
I think that's a great point Brian Evansville made, that the NFL, when the Corey Stringer incident happened, made sure that this has not happened again. I think that's correct. I don't think we've had any NFL players collapse since Corey Stringer did. It was an awful story, but they learned from it. Mike in Florida. What's up, Mike?
Hi, Clay. Great listening to you. Quick question. Number one, it's a tragedy that happened at Maryland, okay? But what I wanted to know is, didn't the family or the kid know that he had anything wrong with his heart, number one, because they said there was a heart murmurs and something wrong? And number two, this is the highest level of sports for kids before they get into the pros, correct? Doesn't anybody in high school, because I was a phys ed teacher, we used to have to give all of our kids physicals, whether they played baseball, football, basketball? I just want to hear your response.
Yeah, I think everybody had to get a physical. I do think a lot of colleges, and I can't speak particularly to his medical condition, but I know a lot of colleges now conduct extensive physicals of their kids so that they can find out if they might have a congenital heart defect that could lead to a death, much like Hank Gathers, Reggie Lewis back in the day, guys who were otherwise completely healthy, they're playing basketball, and then they just collapse and die. It's because they have enlarged hearts and things aren't working exactly properly in their heart. Many athletes have enlarged hearts in those respects. I think a lot of colleges, to their credit, have conducted now extensive physicals, because every now and then you'll see a guy suddenly get pulled out of competition and they'll say, you know what, this guy was in danger of collapsing if he pushed himself too hard. Damian in Indiana, what's up?
Yeah, I don't get how he could be at blame. I mean, you got to stay in your lane. The trainers there, they can step in at any given time. That's their job. They went to school for it. As a head coach, his job is to get the best out of the athlete. I don't get how he could be at fault for this. He was just doing his job. That's all I got to say.
Thanks for the call. Catfish Jake, what you got for me, my man?
What's up, Clay? I think this is a little bit of an indictment on his personality. I think I told you before, my wife went to high school with DJ Durkin, and her mom speaks very ill of them all. She thinks they're all bullies, and they've been that way since high school. She saw it firsthand. So I think this is more behind the scenes of the way he runs his program, the odd stuff he did, like showing the horror movies at breakfast. Just the weird kind of over-the-top stuff he did combined with this going on in his program. I think that got him fired more than just this incident alone. I don't know if it's just that incident alone. If Derek Mason, if it happens at Vandy or at Stanford or something like that, with the reputation those guys have, being kind of nicer guys, I don't know that they lose their job.
It's an interesting question. And look, you guys have been great on discussing this. I'd encourage you. I mean, I haven't heard a really good discussion of Maryland and where blame lands, and great calls from you guys across the board. Hour one in the books. Encourage you to go download the podcast and listen to it. Hour two, we're going to go into baseball and into football. We'll do it next.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Let me bring in Drew Martin. Let's have some fun here. We had some serious conversation for over an hour. Let's make some money on gambling. Drew Martin, who you got tonight? College football, NFL, what's your move?
I guess, Clay, you know, it's a little tough to transition there. I was enjoying your take on the whole Maryland situation. But in the NFL, just real quick, I mean, what, 2 1-win teams, both of them had just 2 wins.
This is something we can all agree on. This is an awful NFL game on Thursday night to start off week 9, right? A lot of people out there might be like, I disagree with Clay Travis, a lot of what he said in the first hour, some of the callers I disagree with. Every single human being on the planet should agree San Francisco 49ers against Oakland Raiders is a crap game.
I totally agree with you, and I'll just keep it real quick. I think both teams are beat up, but just for two different reasons. You know, San Francisco Giants beat up kind of physically, where Oakland's beat up a little mentally. But I think with the trade deadline passing, David Carr kind of coming to last week, 244 yards, 3 touchdowns. And also, Clay, the travel is mitigated. You know, it's been a great bet to kind of fade the away team on Thursday night in the NFL. With it being Oakland versus San Francisco, I think that's mitigated. So I think Oakland plus the 3 is a great bet. And tonight in college football, Clay, it's a tough train to step in front of UCF. 120 straight, McKenzie Milton kind of lighting it up. I think he'll play as well. But Temple 6-0 ATS, their last 6 games, they've been a great bet. It's a great profile. You know, Temple lost to an FCS team week 1 and then went on a run here of 6 straight covers. So it's a tough bet, but yeah, no way I'm stepping in front of this UCF train, Clay.
So you are on UCF too?
Yeah, minus 10.5. If you can find a 10 out there, I like UCF. I think McKenzie Milton, it's a little bit overblown with his injury, in my opinion. I've heard reports second half last, 2 weeks ago now against ECU, he would have played if it was competitive. So I'd look for him to play and then to light it up at home after the extra preparation time.
I'm with you. I'm on Central Florida tonight. I'm not sure what to do on that 49er Raider game. I'm going to bet on it on Lock It In later today, and I've got to figure out. I've got to do my research. I don't have a good lead other than the fact that, man, that game is awful. All right, let's go into the two big college football games. We've got Alabama on the road against LSU. I believe that number now has ticked out to 14.5, which is significant for odds makers. Which way do you see this game going? How would you play it?
Oh, man, this is a tough one for me, Clay. I would look at a couple issues with LSU. One, the linebacker Devin White, he's out the first half with targeting. I think that could hurt him defensively. However, you got to look, you know, it's Saturday night in Baton Rouge, and they've covered 10 of their last 11 SEC games, 4 or 5 this year already. It's just Alabama in that offense, Tua and company, they haven't played a competitive game all season long, and it's like the stock market. I don't want to kind of catch that first one, you know, catch a stock as low as it goes. I think that's a really tough bet to do. So if I had to bet it, I haven't yet, Clay, I'd lay it with Alabama.
I'm on Bama in this game. I don't think there's any doubt. What about Georgia going on the road against Kentucky? Kentucky got a big win over Missouri. Crazy ending to that game. Are you buying into Kentucky as a legitimate threat in the SEC East, or do you expect Georgia to take control when they roll into Lexington?
Well, I do think Kentucky is a threat. You know, they're one game away from being in Atlanta. So, and they've been a double-digit dog twice already, won both. And with this number being pushed, it depends where you kind of take the opening line, but 10 or 11, depending what book. Now it's at 8. Clay, I'm thinking it's a buy low opportunity on Georgia. The way Fromm was dropping dimes against that Florida defense, I know Kentucky's defense is good, and they've had their last 5 games fall under the total, but that's also a bad thing. You know, Kentucky's offense is very limited, and I think we get the better passing quarterback, the more talent on offense, and UGA has kind of really dominated this series, won 8 straight, 6-2 against the number against Kentucky. So, yeah, I'll take the better quarterback, the more talented offense in kind of a buy-low opportunity here on the Georgia Bulldogs.
I'm with you in that game as well. I'm all in on Georgia. Let me ask you about a big game in the Big Ten. Michigan has been on a roll since they lost to Notre Dame. They are hosting Penn State. Penn State very easily could be undefeated. They had a late touchdown go against them from Michigan State. They had, obviously, the double-digit lead that they lost in the final, 8 minutes against Ohio State. What do you think happens with Penn State going on the road against Michigan? Is this game close? Is it not close? What's your breakdown?
Well, I mean, with the Penn State, you know, their last four games, all tough battles within, a touchdown. So it is a tough bet to go against the Nittany Lions. However, you know, Michigan, you touched on it. Since that game against Notre Dame, they've gone on a run here as well, kind of almost the same profile that I was talking about with Temple. But I think for the first time in a while, this Michigan offense is kind of expanding their playbook as the season goes on with Shea Patterson, a talented, you know, you can make the argument next-level quarterback here. Michigan is a bet-on team for me, Clay, and off of a bye week, the extra preparation time. I like Michigan. I know it's sounding a little bit like a square here, laying it with the favorites, but you can still find a 10 flat at BetOnline. That's the way I'd go with on the Wolverines minus 10.
All right, we've also got West Virginia, Texas, another top 25 game. West Virginia, one of two teams, the other's Oklahoma, left in the Big 12 that could theoretically win that conference and be in the playoff picture. The line right around Texas, a 2-point favorite. Texas coming off a tough loss on the road against Oklahoma State. What do you see there?
You know, West Virginia, this is another team with a little bit of extra time to prepare. Their game last Thursday against Baylor, bouncing back after that loss to Iowa State. I'll tell you, Clay, they look really good. 568 yards of offense against Baylor, only 287 yards of offense. Absolutely dominant. 41-0 at half, so they bounce back. I'm actually looking to keep riding West Virginia, 5-2 against the number, and averaging just under 40 points per game this year against Texas. Who let's keep in mind, they're 3-5 against the number, and they've lost all of their Big 12 games this year as a favorite. They're a small favorite here, like you indicated. Plus, Clay, you know West Virginia's offense is very similar to Oklahoma State's offense, who Texas just lost to. And in that profile of offense, I would look to keep that trend going with a better quarterback, with Will Grier kind of manning the head here with West Virginia. I would look to take the points with West Virginia on the road. I like the Mountaineers here, Clay.
All right, last question for you. We're talking to Drew Martin at Drew Martin Betts. You can go follow him there. He works at sportsbookreview.com. You can check out that website as well. Drew, when you look at the overall landscape of college football, any other games that maybe are under the radar that you particularly like that people out there listening might not even be aware of or paying much attention to?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of times more value in the games that a lot of eyeballs aren't on. And heading down to South Florida, it's called the Shula Bowl, FAU at FIU. FAU has been a money burner all season long, 1-7 against the number. They've been losing money almost every week. Versus FIU, you know, you think of South Florida, kind of the lower tier of football, and you think of Lane Kiffin. However, on the other side, for FIU, the coach Butch Davis, he's done a heck of a job there down in Miami. He brought in James Morgan, a transfer from Bowling Green. He's throwing it around well. First in Conference USA in passing efficiency. Also has 19 touchdowns on the year. They're 6-2 against the number. And it's moved from 3.5 to 3, FIU laying at home. So I take that extra hook here. And I like the FIU Panthers -3 on Saturday to cover against the FAU Owls.
Outstanding stuff as always, Drew. We'll talk to you next week. You can follow Drew at Drew Martin Betts on Twitter. Appreciate it, my man.
Thank you, Cliff.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
It's always easier every time we get to talk to John Morosi. Mr. Morosi, how you feeling about Penn State coming to town in Ann Arbor? What's the vibe up there?
Well, Clay, good morning. It's been a very exciting fall in Ann Arbor, that's for sure. I think this is, you go back a couple of years ago when Michigan had the chance to beat Ohio State on that on the spot that didn't go their way, which we don't have to revisit that right now. But that I think outside of that season, this has been probably the most optimistic and exciting one. And I think the most refreshing thing, I think, for a lot of Michigan fans is that You see the way that Michigan played against Wisconsin, just a very thorough game from start to finish, the way they played against Michigan State. Now 2 weeks to prepare for Penn State on Saturday at the Big House. I think there's a lot of optimism, and there's a belief that for the first time in basically two decades that they've got a very good chance to win at the Shoe to end out the regular season. But, of course, long before that happens, they've got to find a way to beat Penn State on Saturday.
That is, of course, a massive game for the Wolverines. We'll be watching it this weekend along with many other college football games in action. Let's go to the Major League Baseball, which is your field of expertise, to be sure, one of many. How good are the Red Sox now that they've officially won the World Series? Is this one of the greatest teams you can remember in the recent history of baseball, maybe the long history of baseball?
It is. It is one of the best all time. Certainly, most wins by any Red Sox team in franchise history. That is absolutely the case. And I think when you compare the Red Sox and the competition right now in the American League, this is probably as maybe one-sided, I think is the word I'll use, as we've seen Major League Baseball in terms of one league really having the concentration of excellent teams between, especially with in the American League right now, with the Red Sox, Yankees, and Astros. You've got three super teams. And I think it's important to note that the first time in history that we saw the Red Sox and Yankees win 100 games in the same year. So the Red Sox were doing all this winning and winning at a historic level at a time when their arch rival actually is not in a down cycle, but in a really up cycle. This is a really impressive Yankees team as well. So they really, Clay, to me, were the ideal fusion of the player development model that Ben Cherington had as the GM and drafting Mookie Betts from Overton High School in Nashville, Tennessee, of course, and developing a really great homegrown core and Andrew Benintendi and Xander Bogaerts, and then Dave Dombrowski coming in and the boldness that we saw from him. I think sometimes in this day and age, some GMs are reluctant to make the big move. And Dave Dombrowski's been a GM for basically 30 years and has made a lot of money in this game, very secure in who he is. He's not afraid to make a big trade or a big signing. And you look at the guys that were instrumental in the Red Sox winning, J.D. Martinez, major free agent signing, David Price, major free agent signing, and then a couple of significant trades, Chris Sale and Craig Kimbrel, which both involved a lot of prospects they had to give up to make those trades happen. So I think it was a nice combination of the 10 years of two general managers that put the Red Sox in the situation. And then, of course, a manager in Alex Cora, who, in my estimation, Clay, is probably as great of a communicator as we have as any manager or coach in pro sports today. Excellent in that regard, knows the game so well, made all the right moves, just a perfect manager for this time.
All right, the big question, I would say, in terms of free agency, and there are a bunch of free agents to pay attention to, Bryce Harper. I don't know if you pay attention to the offshore odds markets as an indicator of where he might go. The Cubs were a big favorite. Now the Phillies have surged to the top of the list. Where do you think he ends up when all is said and done, and how much money is he going to get?
Clay, to me, the Phillies are the most likely destination for Bryce Harper. It's a divisional fit as well. Of course, he knows the National League East very well. I spoke with someone who's been around the Nationals who said he always has loved playing in Philadelphia. Something about road trips there he's really liked. And that, I think, is a really interesting fit in their column. And we know the Phillies have a couple things. Number one, an owner in John S. Middleton who wants to be very, very aggressive in spending and get his team back to the postseason. And also they've got a payroll that's in pretty good shape. They have not added a lot of bad money, so to speak, to that payroll in recent years. So they can have the capacity to sign Harper and probably still not even have a record high payroll for that franchise. So they could be pretty careful with their money and still be rather aggressive with Bryce. There are some people that believe they could sign both Harper and Machado. That's probably a bit of a task that I think would be too difficult. But for me, the corner bat fits so well with the Phillies, and then they'd probably have the corner outfielders would be Rhys Hoskins and Bryce Harper, which is pretty good for an emerging team that believes they can win the division next year.
Is it ever going to happen for the Dodgers?
with this particular generation, that's a great question because, of course, as we speak, somewhat of a live ball news story here, Clayton Kershaw and the Dodgers agreeing to what amounts to nearly a 48-hour extension to get a deal done by Friday to keep him with the organization for probably 3 to 4 more years, depending on how things go. Of course, he's got a 2-year contract right now, but they can maybe reconfigure that to make it a 3 or 4-year deal, including those 2 years, and just keep him by an extra couple of years, and maybe lowering what the AAV is on the deal right now. He's probably still at this point in time, Clay. I think he's the 24th best pitcher in the game, I believe, by Fangraphs. So he's maybe not a $30 million pitcher, but still a pretty good one. Will it ever happen for them? In this particular era, I would like to say yes, but I struggle to see where, Clay, you could say this is how they're going to be a better team next year than they were this year. I don't see them being a better team next year than they were this year. They may well be the same, but I don't see them being better. And that's a difficult spot. Now, where I would say, and maybe my final answer on this topic will be yes, is the National League is not that competitive right now. And so the path for them to get to the World Series is actually probably easier than what you would see for the Red Sox, just because of how brutal the American League is right now compared to the National League. So my answer on this is going to be yes, but I don't see this team getting much better. I just see continued opportunities because the National League is going to, I think, be somewhat conducive to them continuing to have World Series berths.
John Morosi, outstanding stuff as always. Last question for you. What should we be paying attention to the most in the offseason?
I think, like, a couple things. Number one, I'll mention the major free agent names. Harper, Machado, Kershaw, if he opts out, Dallas Keuchel, Patrick Corbin. I think those are all very intriguing, I would say, in some cases, superstar, MVP-type talents that are all, I think, very competitive. I would also look and see, we're talking about windows extended and how long you can keep that going. I look at teams like the Cubs, the Dodgers, as we just discussed, the Indians, teams that maybe were not necessarily getting any better this year, they were sort of staying the same. How much can they extend their windows with the way that they handle their teams this wintertime? And then to me, it's the super teams. The Red Sox, Yankees, Astros, how can they fortify their positions? Justin Verlander has one more year left in Houston before becoming a free agent. How does that shape the way that they handle things? So that the overall, I think the clock's ticking on some of those super teams. How does that make them behave and really extend their windows? But to me, Clay, it's going to be a fascinating offseason. Do we see Nolan Arenado traded in Colorado? Do we see Paul Goldschmidt traded by Arizona? Madison Bumgarner by the Giants? Three players that I just mentioned that all have 1 year left on their contracts. So it's really a great time for the game. Yes, there were certainly some issues that came up in the course of October regarding sign stealing, and oh, by the way, that'll be addressed, I'm sure, next week at the GM meetings there in California. So lots of great storylines to talk about, Clay. There's no shortage of things to keep me busy all winter when I'm not otherwise watching the Big Ten.
Outstanding stuff, as always, John Morosi. Enjoy that game against Penn State this weekend up in Ann Arbor.
Thanks, Clay. Stay in touch, and we'll reach out and talk hot stove and the Big Ten anytime you'd like.
Appreciate that. That's John Morosi. Go follow him on Twitter.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.